Penguin Random House Audio presents Clean, The New Science of Skin by James Hamblin. Read for you by Barrett Letty. Prologue. 5 years ago, I stopped showering. At least by most modern definitions of the word. I still get my hair wet occasionally, but I quit shampooing or conditioning or using soap, except on my hands. I also gave up the other personal care products, exfoliants and moisturizers and deodorants, that I had always associated with being clean. I'm not here to recommend this approach to everyone. In a lot of ways, it was terrible. But it also changed my life. I'd like to say I stopped showering for some noble, virtuous reason, like because an average American shower uses around 20 gallons of perfectly good water. That water then gets filled with petroleum-derived detergents and with soaps made from palm oil farmed on land that would otherwise still be rainforest. The body care products transported around the world in fuel-burning ships and trains contain antimicrobial preservatives and plastic microbeads that end up in our lakes and streams and make their way into our food and groundwater and back into our own bodies. Aisles upon aisles of these products are sold in pharmacies across the globe in plastic bottles that will never biodegrade and that end up floating together, like islands in the ocean. Islands that whales try, tragically, to mate with. The last bit about the whales is not true, I hope. But the rest of these are global effects of daily bathroom habits on the scale of 7 billion people that I hadn't really considered when I first stopped showering. For me, it started simply. It wasn't even really about showering. I had just moved to New York, where everything is smaller and more expensive and more difficult. Not long before, I'd left a career practicing medicine in Los Angeles to try becoming a journalist. Against the advice of pretty much everyone, I was transitioning from a profession that promised a $500,000 salary into a globally imploding job market. I had moved across the country and was back at the bottom of a professional ladder, in a studio apartment, with no clear path in any direction, much less forward or upward. A mentor told me not to start climbing again unless I knew my ladder was against the right wall. He didn't mean stop showering, I don't think. But I saw this as a moment to take stock of everything in my life. In the process of this existential audit, I considered the possessions and habits that I might at least try going without. I cut back on caffeine and alcohol, disconnected my cable and internet, and sold my car, limiting anything that could be an overhead, recurring, mindless cost. I toyed with living in a van, because Instagram made it look so glamorous, but was discouraged adamantly by my girlfriend and everyone else in my life. Even though I wasn't spending a lot of money on soap and shampoo, I did think about the net amount of time that went into using them. Behavioral economists and productivity experts will sometimes quantify the additive effects of small choices to help people break habits. For example, if you smoke a pack a day in New York, you spend almost $5,000 a year. Over the next 20 years, with expected cost increases, quitting could save you almost $200,000. If you stop getting so much Starbucks, as I understand it, you could have a second home in Bermuda. If you spend 30 minutes per day showering and applying products, over the course of a long life, 100 years for purposes of optimism and ease of math, you will spend 18,250 hours washing. At that rate, not showering frees up more than 2 years of your life. Friends and family suggested that I would have trouble enjoying the extra time because I would feel gross, unkempt. My mother worried I'd get sick from some germs I failed to clean off. Maybe I would miss the basic humanity of the routines that compel us to take time for ourselves, and that give us at least some semblance of power to present ourselves as we wish the world would see us. Or I'd miss the simple ritual of taking a nice warm shower and emerging each morning like a new person, ready to face the day. But what if none of this happened? What if I actually got fewer colds and my skin looked better and I found other, better routines and rituals? What if all those products in our bathrooms, shampoos to remove oils from our hair, and conditioners to replace them, soaps to remove oils from our skin, and moisturizers to replace them, were mostly effective in getting us to buy more products? How do you really know if you've never gone more than a couple days without them? I know what it's like to not shower. goes the most common reply from skeptics, and it's not good. To which I say, yes, I know what it's like as a coffee drinker to go without coffee, and it's not good. I know what it's like to go into a party where I know no one, and it's not good. I know what it's like to try to run a marathon without training, and it's not good. But I also know what it's like to slowly use less and less caffeine, and to come to feel at home in new social circles, and to build up to running 26 miles without yearning for the sweet embrace of death. The more gradually a human body eases into these endeavors, the easier they are to do and even to enjoy. Changing daily cleaning habits could be thought of the same way. Over the course of months and then years, as I gradually used less and less, I started to need less and less, or at least to believe I did. My skin slowly became less oily, and I got fewer patches of eczema. I didn't smell like pine trees or lavender, but I also didn't smell like the oniony body odor that I used to get when my armpits, used to being plastered with deodorant, suddenly went a day without it. As my girlfriend put it, I smelled like a person. Initial skepticism turned to enthusiasm. I am under no illusions that I never smelled bad, but it happened less and less regularly, and I started to become aware of patterns. Breaking out or smelling bad usually coincided with other factors: stress, sleep deprivation, generally not thriving. Out at my family's tree farm in Wisconsin or on vacation hiking in Yellowstone, when I might go for days without indoor plumbing, I was almost guaranteed to smell and look decent. In the indolence of winter days, barely moving except to get to and from the office, I felt squalid and smelled accordingly. Essentially, I became more attuned to what my body was trying to tell me. It seemed to be telling me not so much, wash me, as go outside, move around, be social, etc. My body still sometimes trails off and says, etc. It was possible for me to stop showering in large part because I was born with extra credit in the ingrained currency of acceptability in America. I'm an ambulatory white male who appears generally healthy. I'm relatively young and can afford clothes that fit and aren't tattered, or may even purposely be, and to wash and change them regularly. I'm literate and fluent in the dominant local language. All of these things, among others, mean that I move through the world absolved from expectations to look a certain way in order to be perceived as someone who belongs. Even when I am not showered or groomed, I'm unduly likely to still be seen as competent or professional or welcome in a restaurant. In other words, I barely have to do anything to be seen as clean. The social standards that long placed value on such things are intertwined with, among other things, the history of hygiene and sanitation. Some ideas about cleanliness are nearly universal, driven by senses of disgust and revulsion that have evolutionary roots in disease avoidance and self-preservation. But others go far beyond the science of infectious disease or toxic exposure. Routines adopted to protect ourselves from disease have become enmeshed with routines that are socially determined, passed down through complex belief systems that define where we fit into the world and help us hit the right balance of belonging and uniqueness. And even our most personal decisions about caring for our bodies have long been influenced and manipulated by larger power structures. In the course of working on this book, I also got a degree in public health and finished a residency in preventive medicine. This relatively new specialty considers itself a counterbalance to a medical culture that has come to focus too heavily on reactive solutions and narrow, temporary treatments that leave basic causes and fundamental problems unaddressed. It focuses instead on how to prevent disease before it starts, which often comes down to ensuring people have access to basic things like decent food, clean water, and communities where they can safely lead engaged, active, purposeful lives. Health means different things to different people, but it's always associated with a certain level of freedom, especially financial and temporal, that allows people to live well and to focus on relationships and meaningful work. That basic philosophy made me only more curious about the money and time we collectively invest in skincare and the standards that define what's acceptable. Many of these can be traced to an industry that has, for the past 200 years, sold us promises of health, happiness, beauty, and all manner of acceptance based on literally superficial
Sample complete. Ready to continue?